Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. I'm John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Before we get to our interview, if you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Visit the Film Florida merchandise page at filmflorida.creator-spring.com to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and more. All merchandise proceeds go to the Film Florida Filmmaker Grant and Scholarship Fund. Richard Botto is the creator of Stage 32, an online platform and marketplace designed to democratize the entertainment industry. Launched in 2011, the Stage 32 community has grown to over 1 million entertainment creatives and professionals worldwide. In addition, Stage 32 has curated the world's largest educational library with over 3,000 hours of webinars and classes designed to help all film, television, and digital content creators and professionals hone their craft and navigate the industry. RB is also an accomplished actor, screenwriter, and producer. We talk all of this and more on this episode of the Film Florida podcast. Here's my conversation with Richard Botto from Stage 32. Welcome to the Film Florida podcast, Richard.
Great to be here, John. I appreciate you having me.
So let's kind of start at the beginning. Give us your backstory. Help the audience get to know you a little bit.
Well, my backstory with film started really young. I was always a fan of the arts in general. I was, you know, I read a ton when I was a kid and I watched a lot of movies and even loved going to the theater in New York, which was kind of, you know, odd for somebody when they were, you know, like 6, 7, 8 years old. But I just loved the arts. And the thing about film for me was I loved the creative and the business end of it. And that carried out through my career, through my life. It took a long, winding road to get to the film industry and to the business, but it felt like destiny. And, you know, fortunately, I had a few champions along the way that were able to convince my father at the time that maybe the path that he wanted me to take wasn't the one that I was best fitted for as an artist, I guess. You know, I went to pharmacy school briefly because my father was a pharmacist and my brother was a pharmacist, and I was a pharmacy intern, and it all came very easy for me, but that was certainly not the life that I wanted. And, you know, luckily I had a college professor and a couple of other people that, you know, swung the pendulum the other way from my my destiny, I guess, as you would put it.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting, you know, kind of change there. Pharmacy to film. There you go. Yeah,
very different.
So when you launched Stage 32 in 2011, what was the original vision? What gap did you see in the industry that you wanted to fill?
Yeah, it's a great question. I came from a little bit of a technology background. Right before that, I had been running a couple of technology businesses and mainly on the billing side, doing e-commerce billing for a lot of companies out there that were just starting out and didn't really have the pathway to do their own billing. And what I learned very early on was that when something clicks on the internet in a mass way, it usually trickles down in a niche way eventually. And for me, that was broad-based social media. You know, the advent of Facebook and, you know, obviously before that, a little bit MySpace and Friendster, but then Facebook. And then right about the time that we were thinking, you know, I had the idea for this was right about when Twitter was launching and had that big South by Southwest launch. What I saw was, you know, for me personally, I didn't really look at Facebook at the time, which was by far the, you know, the overwhelming leader in the field as far as broad-based social media. I didn't see a massive benefit for me. I felt it was more of a time suck. You know, I was already connected with the people I wanted to be connected to. I had no desire to share pictures of my lunch or, you know, my dog or anything like that. But I noticed that a lot of people that I knew from the business were on there. So I started asking them, you know, what do you get out of it? Are you getting any, is it helping you further your career in any way? Are you making connections that move the needle on, you know, whether you're producing, writing, acting? Are you getting anything out of it? Are you getting jobs, good connections, champions, and things like that? And most of the time what I heard back was, no, it's more for family and friends, and I feel like I'm wasting time on it. So to me, I didn't think it was ever going to go away. I definitely saw the application for it, but I thought that, again, this would trickle down to niches and that there needed to be a social network for people working in film and television. And that's really where the initial kernel of the idea came from, the embryonic idea, you know, came from. But then I also, in my mind, I was like, that's not going to be enough. I wanted to be an educational component to it. But first we had to do, you know, had to prove the value of the actual social network. So that's really where the idea came from.
And now there's an interesting story behind the name Stage 32. Share where that all came from and what it symbolizes.
Sure. So when when I was conceiving this whole entire thing, you know, I sat down with a legal pad and wrote all the, you know, the mission and the idea and, like, you know, where we wanted to take this thing and how I envisioned it and the idea of having everybody stand in front of their own name and all of these things. Like, and I kept coming back to sort of integrity and transparency and so on and so forth. So, you know, I wrote down maybe 50 names for the site and I hated all of them. And I had the idea of like this, like a soundstage. Okay, what's the numbers? What's the number? What could it be? Why is there a significance? And the long story short is, you know, I'm a big Orson Welles guy. And, you know, obviously Orson Welles, you know, Citizen Kane and Magnificent Ambersons, and then, you know, went on Touch of Evil and things like that. The thing about Welles, of course, was that he was the child prodigy, right? He was the guy that they handed the keys to the RKO kingdom to at, you know, 23 years old. And then they kind of ran him out of town because everybody said he was too much of a tyrant and he was, you know, all of that. And the years were unkind to him. That idea of him being difficult to work with and, you know, overwhelmingly commanding and in his needs and his wants and, you know, not being a true collaborator, that really stuck to him. And unfortunately, it probably cost them a lot of what should have been a much better and a much more richly received creative career and not peddling wine in his later years. But the thing is I started reading a lot of biographies and you know, anything I get my hands on about Welles. And what you learned was that he really was the ultimate collaborator. He was the true collaborator. And if you look at Citizen Kane, you realize that he took a lot of the people that he did radio with that had never acted before and put them in films and gave them film careers. And he listened to everybody and he accepted input from everybody. He was a great collaborator. And even if you look at the film that they released a few years ago that they completed with Bogdanovich and all that, everybody said, like, you know, look, that was it. He wanted all his friends and all his people to give input to it. So anyway, while I was researching the name, I came to find out that Citizen Kane, which I love to death, and I actually don't think is overrated, quite frankly, was filmed on RKO 17, which was the old, you know, RKO Studios. RKO Studios was eventually bought by Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, and then they eventually sold it to Paramount. And so the old RKO is where Paramount is today. And if you go to RKO 17, it is now Paramount Stage 32. And if you go to Stage 32 at Paramount, you will see a plaque highlighting the fact that Citizen Kane was filmed there. So that's where Stage 32 came from.
Great, great story. That's amazing. So in the early days of Stage 32, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in building a global creative network?
Well, by far, convincing people there was an actual application for this and there was an actual need. I certainly recognize that, you know, tech people that build tech platforms and a lot of people in technology will tell you that they built something because they saw a need for other people. I actually saw the need for myself. I should say, you know, I was producing at the time. I was writing at the time. I had started as an actor. And the one thing that I learned about this business in those early days of me doing all those things was that every business is tribal, but this one is by far the most tribal. This, you know, business runs on relationships. It runs on word of mouth and champions. And it is very, very important that you work on networking all the time and that you're building those relationships because it matters. So one thing I knew going in, and I accepted this going in, was that the old guard at the time was never going to accept this. So I was going to have to spend years working on convincing people and showing people the value. So I knew the toughest problem that we were going to have to overcome, the biggest hurdle, was making it a vibrant community and making sure that it was actually active and that people were getting things out of it. So I mentioned earlier, you know, I went to all my friends that were in the industry that were on Facebook. I went right back to them. And, you know, I've told this story a bunch of times, but it really is to me that it shows you the power of what we, at the time, we didn't know it was crowdsourcing. You know, eventually I wrote a book on crowdsourcing, but we didn't know that was what it was called at the time. But what I did was I went to 100 of those people and I said, look, this is what I built. I did it the exact opposite of the way you're supposed to do it. I put my own money in to build it. And I built it before I sent anybody like a business plan or anything. I just said, I'm going to go do it. I'm going to build the first phase of it. I'm going to build a network part of it. And I'm going to go out to people. And I did that. And I went to 100 people. And I said, look, you're joining. I don't want to hear any excuses that you're not going to join. You're going to take a half hour just to create a profile and look around. If you like it, I want you to give me three ideas for improving it. Three things you'd like to see. And if you don't like it, you need to give me three reasons why you don't like it. And one of them cannot be because I'm on Facebook. And 97 of them got back to me. Three of them I hunted down. And my second request for all the ones that joined and said, we like it, is please invite at least five fellow creators, five people you think will benefit from this, five collaborators you work with, five people you worked on films, whatever. Some people invited 500, some people invited, you know, a few. But within 3 months, we went from those original 100 people to 5,000 people. And that's when I said, okay, we got something here. That request is there to this day. Like if you join Stage 32 right now, you'll get a welcome message from me. It's the only thing that is ever automated on the site, by the way. It's an automated welcome message, but anything else you see of me on the platform is me. But it's the same request. Like, look, this is a community for you that's built by you. Like we built this on word of mouth. We didn't do this through advertising and everything. We've gone from those original 100 people to almost 1.5 million people on the platform now worldwide. So that was the challenge, but it was something that we overcame pretty quickly to prove it. And it was, you know, I mean, obviously you can imagine it was very exciting to see the community grow that quickly and people getting the value out of it that quickly.
Absolutely. Now, Stage 32 also has a large education library online with leading professionals. Why is workforce development such an important part of what you do?
It's everything to me. The education part of it was, you know, as I mentioned earlier, a component that I knew I wanted, but I couldn't have it on day one until we built up the reputation and showed the social proof of the vibrancy of the community and the network. But what we spent those first 2 or 3 years doing was showing that to a lot of influential people in the industry worldwide. And what we were telling people is, look, we are going to eventually launch education. And why that was important to me was, as a writer especially, I had been exposed to a lot of scammers online and a lot of people who were teaching classes that weren't qualified. You know, I had this one moment where I was writing a script and I got to the end of it. And I'm like, you know, I'd love to take like a short refresher on rewriting. And I found this webinar online, and this guy claimed to be from, you know, Fox, and he worked at HBO and he worked at Paramount. And I'm like, I'm looking the guy up, and I'm going, God, this seems really off. And then finally I did some digging, and the guy was stupid enough not to change his LinkedIn. And he was an insurance adjuster from Nebraska, never worked a day in the industry. He had written some screenplays and stuff like that. And I called him out on it. I went to him and I wrote him and I said, you take this down or I'm going to Fox and I'm going to, you know, we're going to, and he took it down. And that was a moment where I said, look, this guy, you know, writers are always being scammed online. You know, as an actor in New York, we took it as a badge of honor when we got scammed for headshots and things like that. But online, it's a different story. So that really stuck with me. And it was why education was so important. And it took us about 3 years to launch it. So probably about 2014 or so. And, you know, today we have by far, I mean, it's not even close, the world's largest library of film and television craft and business education. And the other big thing for me was that I wanted the craft stuff is all there. And a lot of people could teach the craft, but it was very important to me that we put a heavy emphasis on the business because, you know, film schools and, you know, which are becoming more and more outdated and more and more archaic. And everybody wants to teach you the craft, but nobody teaches you how to navigate the business. And man, that's the craft could come as natural as could be, or you can learn some things. But if you don't learn how to get out there, how you get your work out there, how to navigate or how to talk in a room or how to get in a room, then, you know, unfortunately, all that talent is going to, you know, either sit on a hard drive or your hopes will run down so much that you're just never going to get into the game in a meaningful way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that for sure. Now, Stage 32 has members in over 180 countries. How do you see this global community shaping the future of film, and what role does it play in strengthening the industry?
Also a great question. Something that I think that we were way ahead of the curve on. You know, we really believed early on, as early as like 2013, that the industry was going to be going more global and more global and more global, and that there would be an acceptance from American audiences in particular, which was dominating the entire scene at the time, from streaming to distribution to everything else, there would be an appetite eventually for people to in America to embrace foreign content. And clearly we've seen that in a big, big way. And now to the point where obviously, you know, you have Netflix and, you know, Disney and many, many others investing massive money overseas. And that trend's not, you know, is just going to continue. It's just going to grow. The globalization aspect, is something that I think we saw around the curve on. So it's more important than ever right now. I would say that, you know, maybe about 5 years ago, our member base was about 75% domestic and 25% international. Those numbers are about 50-50 now. And the increase in the amount of people that we're seeing internationally that join every day is staggering. And, you know, we're really thrilled with it. And that really led to some of the things that we're doing with certification, for example, and being able to educate and train people around the world in support of all this content that's being made worldwide. So I think it's monumentally important. It's one of the things I'm really kind of proud of is that we saw it, we stuck to our guns. I actually remember, I'll tell a really quick story to add to this question, but I remember having a meeting in 2013 or 14 with a higher up at a major studio, and I won't say which studio and I won't say who it was, but this person told me, when I said, look, you guys are going to be investing so much in international content in 5 to 10 years, it's going to make your head spin. And he said, you're out of your fucking mind. And that's a direct quote. And they're one of the leaders in investing in foreign content right now. So it's just, we saw it. And fortunately for us, we were right. We took a bet on it and we were right.
Now, in addition, you're working with more than 50 film commissions worldwide, now training in their areas, helping elevate production talent for global production teams. You've recently been expanding Stage 32 certification. I saw you're in Torino, Latin America, South America, Spain, and of course, your new partnership with Film Florida, which of course I want to mention. Why do you think Stage 32 certification is taking off as much as it is?
I'm so proud of this because this was a baby of mine, something that I wanted to launch actually in 2016. It took us until 2024, I believe, to launch it for a couple of reasons. One, again, we had to create a proving ground and build relationships with the film commissions worldwide. So that took a little while. We really were ready to go right around 2020, and then COVID hit. And that's what really kind of pushed us back. But when we were ready to launch on 2024 and we were on the other side of that, here in America, of course, we were dealing with the double whammy of COVID and the strikes. And what I think that did internationally, I don't think it, I know it, is that all these film commissions, all these governments, all the controlling bodies said, this is our opportunity. Let's invest in this. Let's attract filmmaking and television to our areas. So you had more film commissions than ever, and even more regionally and so on and so forth, investing in film. And now that's a great thing. And that I think is going to continue for a very, very long time. Of course, it was fantastic for us because they were the exact targets that we had for this certification program. But the problem that these commissions had and these organizations had and had to do with being able to support those incentives with talent, you know, with available talent. And that was a real challenge for some. For example, you could take country A and they're offering 40% and country B is offering 30%. You go to country A and you say, well, we want to film here. And what do your crews look like? And they go, well, you know, we have two big television shows. Plus, you know, Tim Burton's coming down here with a big movie. So we got to move everybody over there. So either one, you could bring your own crews or you could wait a year. Now, obviously, you don't want to wait a year. Two, if you bring your own crews, that 40% isn't 40% anymore. You may be down to 26, 27, maybe even less. And then you go to country B and you say, okay, you're 30%. What do you got? And they're like, oh my God, our infrastructure is tremendous. And you're going to have top of the line and everything like that. So for the people that didn't have that infrastructure, Stage 32 certification has become a no-brainer. They pay us to train people in their areas. We certify them. And now when you go there, you're able to say, okay, I need production accountants or, you know, line producers and so on and so forth. And you're able to pick from a database of all the people that have gone through Stage 32 certification. So in a very short period of time, as you mentioned, you know, it's over 50 now. It's actually over 60 commissions and organizations we're working with. We've also had media companies like Bloomberg Media who are expanding their their video content library. And by virtue of that, having to hire more people, we've put them, you know, they've hired us for people through their training. We have a massive deal with NEOM in Saudi Arabia, where we're training over 1,000 people a year, which is fascinating. So it's been an incredible success, but it's also been probably one of the most rewarding things that we've done so far. And to be doing it with Film Florida is a thrill. I've done a couple of movies down there, and it's exciting for me to see the investment, you know, into filming in Florida and putting people to work. You know, there's nothing better than that. The fact that we're putting people to work and keeping them to work is, I mean, doesn't get any better.
Yeah. Now, is there an area of the industry or a skill set that surprises you at how popular the certification is?
I wouldn't say there's one particular thing. I do believe that what you're seeing now on the producing side is that people want to expand their skill set. You know, one of the things that we noticed on Stage Day 2 in general, from when we started to now, is when people, in the early days of Stage 3, too, of course, when you sign up for an account, you choose your professions, right? Early on, the average number of professions that a person would select was somewhere around like 1.7 to 1.9. So, you know, but maybe two, okay? Let's call it two. Today, you know, that number is about 4.6, you know, a little bit higher. And that's because two reasons, I believe. One is that people are understanding that the more you know, the better off you are in the business, one. Two, I think the reason is a lot of people are controlling their own content now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not waiting for permission anymore. They're looking at other distribution angles. They're looking at ways that they could get their content out into the world and get it made quicker. They want to learn more, and they're becoming writer directors. You know, I know a lot of screenwriters that I'm friends with, peers that, you know, 8 years ago, when you say, why don't you direct? They'd be like, oh my God, I'm never going to direct. And now 95% of them are directing, right? Because they see the need. I could probably say of the same group, probably 70% of them are producing now, which they weren't before, because the longer you can hold control, the better off you're going to be in this day and age, in my opinion. So we're seeing more of that. But more specific to your question with the certification side, what we're seeing is people who maybe were just line producers are looking at more of like production accounting and maybe a little bit more of even on set producing opportunities, you know, that are a little bit more outside, you know, they're adjacent to maybe what they did. So I think people are just casting a wider net, which I believe is really, really smart. And why limit yourself? You know what I mean? Like the more doors you could open and the more that you could prove that you have those skills, the more opportunity is going to come your way.
Absolutely. That's right. Now, beyond your work directly with Stage 32, you've produced a number of films, two international features last year. One is from Colombia, the other is Costa Rica. Talk a little bit about why there are the filming opportunities outside LA and what kind of attracted you to going international.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunities really, I mean, is it's just the fact that there are so many opportunities that you don't need to be filming in LA anymore. You know, you're seeing all these U.S.-based commissions, again, like regionally, like we're working with places like Pittsburgh, which you never in a million years, but they're paying us to certify people there. They're seeing the opportunity, right? With the Costa Rica example, what really is fascinating about that is the person that produced that film actually went through Stage 32 certification and hired a lot of people that had gone through Stage 32 certification. So that was a really rewarding thing. Obviously, they had some really nice tax benefits there. And of course, because they were local, they had even a little bit more. So that made it very attractive to shoot there. We were able to stretch the dollar amazingly. The Colombia one was pretty similar. That could have went to a bunch of different places, but the incentives and the rebates that were there just made it a no-brainer. And, you know, the story fit. We, you know, some of it was in New York as well, and we were able to kind of dip into that a little bit. And really, I mean, ultimately what it comes down to when I'm producing these days, it doesn't matter where the script is set. Sometimes you sit there and say, where else can it be done? And we're not going to lose anything. Can we make someplace else look like this? And you'd be amazed, like 90% of the time, there are places where you can make something look like the suburbs of Los Angeles or whatever. So I think that's the beauty of being in the business right now. If you're a producer or a filmmaker, is that the opportunities have never been greater, and the opportunities to shoot more inexpensively have never been greater. And, you know, I think that's just going to grow. It's just going to keep going.
Yeah. And you've also recently sold an original television script to Amblin with an Apple showrunner attached. Talk a little bit about the process and give some advice to someone who might want to develop an original project and sell it.
Yeah, I'm thrilled you asked this question because this is exactly what I was talking about a couple of questions before about the more you know, and on this, and also it plays into why when we started Stage 32 Education, why I wanted so much emphasis on the business, because selling this TV show was part of it was me recognizing the fact that I needed help because I wasn't going to be accepted. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Up until that point, I had only sold features, and I've sold four features, and none of them have been made. I've gotten paid handsomely, but you know, that's it. You know, so, but the way that this business works, of course, is that, oh, you sold features, so you're a feature writer, and that's it. The show was something that came to me. It was a true story. It was something I did a massive amount of research on. I was shocked that it's never been told before, but there was no way it could be a film. Just no way. It was too much. So I wrote the pilot and I wrote the Bible and, you know, I mapped out three seasons. I knew enough, again, to know what I needed to be able to get into a room. And if you're pitching TV, you better know three seasons. You better know your pilot and you better know your ending for the most part. Even if you're going to change it, doesn't matter as long as you know it and you can sell it in the room. But here's the other thing I know. Two things. One was that the show was going to be very expensive. It's a prestige TV show. There's no way around it. It's going to be, you know, it's a period thing. It's going to be expensive. So there's only so many homes for it. That's one barrier that I'm already going to face. Okay. The second barrier I'm going to face is I've never been a showrunner and I've never written TV before. I can get around the I've never written TV before if they like the pilot. If they read and they're interested, then they can go, okay, well, the guy can write, but fine. So what I did was sent the script to, and I actually only sent it to him for him to read. I didn't actually send it to him to be the showrunner, but I sent it to a friend of mine who is like the number one M1A, or 101A, if you will, on For All Mankind on Apple. And I said, I just would love to get your opinion on it. And he came back to me. And oddly enough, and just a complete coincidence, he had had before writing for TV, he had actually worked in this area as a reporter. And he knew a ton about it. And he thought I knew that. And I didn't. But he was like, this is insane. This is incredible. And I'd love to attach myself to it. And I said, done. So that having now, like we talked about earlier, how much can you control how far down the road? So now I had the script. I had another producer attached that had done some TV. And I had my showrunner. And now it became a hell of a lot easier to get into rooms. So, you know, we picked four places. Amblin was one of them. And there were three others that we thought would do prestige. And we got into all four rooms and all four were interested. And Amblin just came in and said, don't do anything. We're going to probably take this off the table. And they did a week later. Still not made yet, but they're pushing through the pipeline. And, you know, TV took a little bit of a hit. And again, this is prestige and they're not making a lot of it right now, but everybody's very confident that that's going to come back again. But I got paid handsomely again. But again, it was me checking my ego at the door, me understanding that, you know, and even when we went into negotiations, and I think this is very important to anyone listening. When we went into negotiations, I didn't minimize my value, though. Like, everybody loved the script. Everybody loved, not one word of that script got changed. The Bible stayed the same. Okay, so everybody went on my side of the table, the showrunner and the producer went to bat for me to basically say, look, this guy needs to be treated not like a first-time writer. He needs to be paid that way. And even the showrunner said, look, I might leave after year one, but there's no way I'm going to have this in the it's not going to be in the contract that RB takes over in year two. So that was a big point of negotiation. So what I would say is, yes, I checked my ego at the door, but then when it came time to bring the entertainment attorneys in and everything like that, there were certain things I certainly conceded on, but there were a lot of things that I dug my feet into the ground on and had that support. So you got to know your battles, you got to pick your battles, but most importantly, to get something done, you got to know the business and you got to know how to navigate it. You know, if I would have had that ego and been like, I can run the show, it never would happen. Never in a million years.
Well, continuing the theme of the more you know, the more you can do, you also recently acted along Academy Award nominated Abigail Breslin in Twilight's Boo Boo Street in A Good Fight, which is coming out soon. given that in a creative career, you often wear many hats, as we've talked about, was it hard to transition to be amongst all of these different things? And, you know, going back to what we originally talked about, of the more that you know and all the, you know, the different professional development, what are the tips for people who want to be multi-hyphenates, we'll call it, but also don't want people to look at them and kind of think, okay, a jack of all trades, but a master of none?
Wow, that's a really good question. Okay, I can back into that a little bit. You know, I started as an actor in theater in New York, but I didn't do a lot of acting in film. And when I came out of, I was running a magazine called Razor that was a men's lifestyle magazine, it was national. And I met a ton of people through that. And one of the people that I met was, and I became very friendly with, was Jay Russell, who was the director who did Ladder 49, My Dog Skip. He's had a really big career and he's produced a lot of really great stuff. And on top of it all, he's a great guy. And when I was kind of transitioning out of Razor and I said, you know, I love to produce and write and everything like that, he made the comment to me. He said, look, he goes, here's the lesson. Here's the shortcut. If you could believe that there's a shortcut, he goes, if you're not bringing value, you bring nothing. So in other words, you can go out there and say you're a producer all you want. And everybody does. And you go to, you know, stand at the old, like I used to go to the Lowe's at AFM, go to the old Lowe's bar when they used to let everybody in and everybody was producer and nobody was really doing anything. He's like, you're really not a producer unless you're presenting value. And that was what allowed me to produce Sam Levinson's first film, Another Happy Day, because I was able to help raise some of that money. And that was value. Okay. So I learned that lesson really, really quick. Writing, I literally just threw myself into it and started learning. I started reading great scripts. I started reading scripts and watching it on the screen and everything like that. And then I started just doing it. And I took the bullets, you know, the first couple of things I wrote, you know, people were tearing them apart. And there was part of me that like, they don't know what they're talking about. But then, you know, there's part of me that I sat there and went, okay, I need to be listening and I need to be accepting and I need to be open. And that's a big part of it as well. So when I got the call to act in this movie, I really had done only one small thing on film, but maybe 6 years ago. And this was a really, really big part. And it's just, the director totally trusted me. He thought of me for this role and everything like that. And I went down and I'll be honest with you, the first day, I'm like, how am I going to I'm going to kill this guy's movie. I'm just going to kill it. And the first couple of scenes that we shot for a minute there, it was like, I missed my mark and this, and I'm like, and then all of a sudden it went bang and it rolled and everything was fantastic and everything, you know, it fell back into place. And all I kept saying to myself is, you've done this and you know this, right? So I think for anybody, I think that's listening and that wants to do these different things, to me, it's two big points. One is I am always, always in a mode of self-learning. I want to learn everything all the time. I am open to learning all the time. I don't think I know it all. Okay. Even though I've sold scripts, for example, I don't sit there and go, I've written the perfect script, or like, I just wrote something that match with somebody's sensibility at the right time. That's the way I look at it. Doesn't mean the next thing is going to be great. Doesn't mean it. But I'm going to put myself and try to learn more. And, you know, when I watch something that I really love, I'm going to find that script and I'm going to read it. And why does it connect? And why does it work so well? And everything like that. With producing, I am always on top. I mean, producing is probably one of the hardest because the world is changing so quickly. But I read the trades every day. I'm on top of everything. I talk to other producers and people that, may, you know, if they made a film, if I go to Cannes or if I go anywhere, if even I'm out at a bar in LA and I'm out with producers, and I'll say, how did you put that thing together? How did you get that actor? Did you have the money first? What'd you do? And I'm always in a state of curiosity. But here's the second one. And this is the one that is the big one. Okay. Everyone has imposter syndrome and everybody will take confidence hits. All right. The way you get through that is two things. One is to recognize and celebrate all the little micro goals towards your macro goal and to understand that you're making progress, okay? If you always stay kind of in a smaller lane and not worry about the big prize all the time, you'll realize all the progress you're making. And the B to that is you have to surround yourself with a like-minded community. And that's why, trust me, you sign up for Stage 32, it's free to sign up. I don't make any money off of you. So, but I'm telling you to join and to get involved in the community because it's a game changer for people. You have that support 24/7, 365. You will see other people that are having the same problems that you're having, the same difficulties, the same thing dealing with rejection and you know, it didn't work out that well. And oh my God, I went on this audition. I thought I had it, but I didn't get it. It's a beautiful place to be because you're able to share those stories. You're also able to share in the successes and you're able to see that it's possible. So that's my advice is, you know, you just have to be learning all the time and you have to make sure that you're putting yourself in a positive environment. If people are negative to your hopes and dreams, and excuse my language, but cut them the fuck out.
There you go. What trends should film professionals be paying attention to over the next 3 to 5 years?
Absolutely. 100% number one thing is global. What's going on globally, the opportunities that are going on globally. I would say other things to pay attention to, of course, are new distribution channels, ways to get your work out there. That's all going to continue to evolve. You know, traditional distribution models have kind of been blasted into space already. Some of the old traditional distribution models, I think, are going to expand a little bit again. I think what's old is going to become new in pockets, but I also think that evolution will continue. But understand that storytelling is universal. Opportunities now are global. Don't be thinking LA all the time. It's not really feasible and it's not really happening. And the toothpaste is out of the tube as far as I'm concerned. So pay attention to where your dollar is going to go the furthest or where the opportunities are. If you're a writer, stop just thinking that you need LA connections. You need connections all over the place. If you're an actor, you know, it's look, you know, self-taping, the benefit of it. I don't love it, but the benefit of it is that you can really audition for anything, anywhere. So there's good and bad with some of that, but to me, there's a lot more good. But you have to be paying attention to it. And you have to realize that if you're not, like I spend an hour every day since the day we launched Stage 32, I spend an hour every day working that site, building relationships, an hour every single day. And if I miss an hour, I double up when I can, okay? That community and those connections I've made have led, if you go to my IMDb and you look at all the things I've produced, all the things I've done or whatever, right? Every single one of those projects, with the exception of one, has come through connections I made on that platform. And that's because you build relationships and then people go, oh, you know what? You should talk to RB about that. You should, like, that's the way it works, right? So you just got to be, what you got to pay attention to is, one, read the trades, understand what's going on in the world at all times, okay? So that's Deadline, Hollywood Reporter, Variety, I would say, and maybe, you know, The Wrap or whatever, okay? But make sure you're on top of that. You don't have to read every freaking article. You don't have to read the reviews about Saturday Night Live that they put up 50 of them. You don't have to worry about that. What's going on in the business and move on. Okay, it'll take you 10 minutes. And then be out there networking, be out there, you know, connecting and being, like I said earlier, be in a constant state of self-education. Take webinars, you know, things that interest you, learn, even if, like, for example, because this is very important too. Let's use the screenwriting angle again. Even if you're a screenwriter, you have no desire to be a producer, you still should be taking producing classes because you need to understand the why. Okay. The more you understand the why and the what of what people do, the easier it is sometimes to even deal with rejection. Because sometimes the rejection isn't, the script isn't good. Sometimes the rejection is, it's just not a fit. But if you don't understand that going in, maybe you wouldn't pitch it there then, right? You know, it's little things like that. It's like setting yourself up for success. And the way you set yourself up for success is to have as much knowledge as humanly possible.
Very good. Very good. Richard, where can listeners learn more about you and everything you personally have going on, as well as Stage 32?
Well, I would hope that you will join Stage 32. Like I said, it's free. That's stage32.com. And when you get on there, like I said, you're going to see an automated message from me. Respond to it. And the response you'll get will be me. So just say hello and that you heard me on the podcast or whatever. And, you know, if you have any questions, just shoot them at me. And then on, well, I still call it Twitter, on X and Instagram, you could find me at RB, my initials, RB walks into a bar.
Okay.
Which tells you all you need to know about. You know, a little personality into my handle. But yeah, RB walks into a bar on Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. Well, Richard, thanks for taking the time to be with us today and share the story of Stage 32. And of course, thank you for your support of Film Florida and everyone that works in the industry here in Florida. And thanks for being on the Film Florida podcast.
John, I really appreciate you being here, and I appreciate, just tremendous questions, by the way. I enjoyed every bit of it, and it's a thrill to be working with Film Florida. This is what it's all about, and I'm excited to hear the success stories that come out of this program, and hopefully it's going to put a lot of people to work and drive a lot of projects into the area. So I couldn't be more thrilled and more excited, and I appreciate you having me here.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Film Florida podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org and like or follow our social media pages. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at filmflorida.creator-spring.com. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.